This is WBAI 99.5 FM. The People's Peace and Justice Radio. That's right. Throw your fist up. This is Rise Up Radio. As I just said, this is Saki. You were just listening to another track off of the Dead Prez latest album. And we're going to get started with our first guest.
Yeah, that's right. And just to give you a little background, in 1986, Dr. Mindy Thompson Fullilove was asked to join a team of researchers in California who were looking for new ways to fight the AIDS epidemic. Of particular concern was the rapid spread of the disease in poor communities of color. Dr. Fullilove has devoted a good portion of her career to thinking about AIDS in Black America. Her recent work examines intersections between the AIDS epidemic and the psychic damage caused by housing destruction in Black communities. She has a book forthcoming in June entitled Root Shock, How Tearing Up City Neighborhoods Hurts America and What We Can Do About It. Also, her efforts to examine systemic problems that have accelerated the spread of AIDS is featured in Jacob Levinson's recently released book, The Secret Epidemic, The Story of AIDS in Black America. Mindy, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And so first I wanted to ask you, in 1986, you were living in Berkeley, is that right?
Yep.
And you were asked to join a recently assembled research team, so maybe you could give us a little background about how you got started with this work.
At the time, I was working in community psychiatry in a community mental health center in the Mission District, and I was thinking that I might like to, you know, get a new job. And one day the phone rang, Saturday morning, a guy called up. He said, well, would you like to get a new job studying AIDS? And I said, well, you know, I just wasn't really thinking about that. And he said, well, come have lunch. And it turned out that the Black and Hispanic community leaders had organized an effort to get the University of California at San Francisco to share some money they were going to get for the research of AIDS. Now, of course, you may know that when researchers get money to do research, they don't share it with communities. They go into communities and they get the people to be in their studies, but they don't give the communities money either to do research or they just don't give the communities the money. They keep the money. So these people, led by Shirley Gross and Salahuddin, said, no, you're going to give us some money and we're going to do some research. You can imagine. So this came to a showdown. And on this day, Salahuddin, who was the leader, just a big, very impressive Black man, said to all these white researchers, we're going to shut it down if you don't do this, if you don't give us this money. And he slammed his briefcase down on the table and he started to walk out. And they said, okay, let's talk. Let's deal.
And so what were some of the early initiatives? What was your first research approach?
Well, we actually started talking to minority community leaders about AIDS. And many of them, especially the church leaders, didn't want to hear about it. But others of them sort of pulled us aside and said, you know, we know AIDS is important, but actually there's a bigger problem, and that's the crack epidemic. So one of the first things we started studying was the crack epidemic, and it immediately became clear that the crack epidemic was going to worsen the AIDS epidemic.
How so?
Crack epidemic involved a lot of trading sex for drugs under very unsafe conditions. Mm-hmm. Because it turned out that in crack houses, people could just do sexual favors and stay high for days on end. And in the process of staying high and having sex under those conditions was also sex that was the most likely to lead to disease. For example, people might burn their lips while smoking crack and so have sores, and that made it easy for the virus to get in, or they might get other sexually transmitted diseases. So the crack epidemic turned out to be like an accelerant. It just made the AIDS epidemic go that much faster.
And at this time, why do you think it was something that wasn't being talked about amongst the leaders within these minority communities? Was it still at that point in time something seen as a homosexual disease?
You mean why wasn't AIDS being talked
about?
Right,
yeah.
Well, AIDS was being talked about. It was just that there were those leaders who could approach it very easily. Like mm-hmm. Salahuddin, who had a background in drug treatment, has always been a community activist. He had no trouble. In fact, he was leading the fight to incorporate AIDS into all aspects of community life. The religious leaders were having enormous amounts of difficulty because to them, both all of the sexual practices, whether it was homosexuality or trading sex for drugs, was related to sin.
Right.
And the issue was that they couldn't get near it other than to say, stop sinning.
Right.
And that wasn't terribly helpful.
And so I'm kind of interested. It was just very compelling, this kind of trajectory of you seem to have some broader ways of trying to connect different issues. And it was always difficult. It sounded like it was difficult for you at first to get funding for looking at AIDS and some of the ways you wanted to examine it. So maybe you could talk about some of your recent work and some of the broader connections you're making between AIDS and community and housing and people being burned out of their houses in some of the neighborhoods and cities.
It actually wasn't easy. It wasn't hard to get money in the beginning when we were looking at AIDS in very narrow, very traditional ways. Mm-hmm. It was when we said, wait a minute, there's all these neighborhoods where AIDS is located, and these neighborhoods are missing about a third or half of their buildings. And then we said, well, so we have to understand these neighborhoods. That was when the money suddenly dried up. And it had to do with really beginning to talk about structural issues like who owns the land and who takes care of the land. The government wasn't willing to pay for us to study that. So it's been scrounging from grant to grant to really be able to investigate those issues. You know when you've hit a structural issue when the funding dries up.
Right, right. And so why do you think that these are issues that the government wouldn't fund, if even if you're relating them to a topic that they consider important, like AIDS?
Well, if you think about the founding of the American Republic, they got the land, the white settlers coming over from Europe got the land by dispossessing the Native Americans. So these issues of land, who owns it and who gets to profit from it, are really fundamental. And dispossessing poor people has been a tactic that they've been using ever since. And they do something even more complex, which is they then give them a little bit of land, a little reservation, and then they take it back. For example, the Native Americans were told in the beginning, well, why don't you just move west of the Appalachians? That was going to be their part of the continent. Then the white people decided, oh, it's a little mountain. Let's go over it. Why don't you guys move west of the Mississippi? Then they were like, oh, we want to go west of the Mississippi. Why don't you guys go on a reservation? They're like, oh, you're on the wrong reservation. That has good land. Why don't you go in the desert? So this dispossessing populations has been a fundamental part of the story of the Americas, white settlement in America, and it's always been tied to racism. Now, how that gets linked to AIDS is that black populations, too, have been displaced at the convenience of power structure. And this kind of constant disruption of communities creates illness. And it creates whatever illness happens to be around at the time. And in this time period, the disruption has created the foundation for AIDS.
And maybe you could illustrate that a little by giving us an example of a particular neighborhood that you've worked in.
Well, one of the neighborhoods that I've learned a lot about, and my buddy who's told me about it, David Jenkins, is here with me today, is the Elmwood neighborhood in Philadelphia. It's in southeast Philadelphia, a working-class neighborhood, black and white, that had come to Philadelphia to work in various kinds of industries, a lot of chemical industries. Naphtha Fells had a plant there, some oil refineries. And this neighborhood was taken by a program of the federal government in the 1950s, which was called Urban Renewal. And all the community people were moved out of the neighborhood. The area was bulldozed, partly to build middle-income housing, not for the people who had been there, but for other people, and partly to expand the airport. So my friend David was 11 when this happened, and his family and all his neighbors had to move. Many moved all different directions, so the neighborhood was broken up. And people lost really important connections and relationships and helpful things. They never got full value for their property. A lot of the community institutions were destroyed. And it's not just the losses in the moment, but that then each of the people has to try to build a new community. They're not trying to build a new community together. And this is a painful loss that still hurts people to this day. And the weakening of community by this resettlement, I mean, think about the story of the Native Americans and hundreds of years later, how much they're still suffering from the number of times we forced them to move. And so it's a heavy, heavy burden that I've noticed in people from all of these neighborhoods, and certainly as David talks about it in his own life.
And I was wondering also if you could maybe get at some of the differences between how the epidemic functions in rural areas versus urban areas.
Well, the AIDS epidemic functions the same way in all areas, and that is that people collect to have sex and share drugs in some kinds of places, and the rules around sharing sex and drugs allow you to share sex and drugs with a number of different people. But that's what has to happen for an infection to spread. So one of the things that's been very important and the same in urban and rural places is crack houses. Crack houses have been very detrimental to rural areas throughout our nation. Other drugs as well. And obviously in the crack house, people are taking drugs and having sex, just as we talked about in San Francisco 20 years ago. So that's the heart of it. And in all these places in our nation, it's people who've been dispossessed, whether they're gay men who've been dispossessed because their sexual orientation is stigmatized, or whether they're poor black people who've been dispossessed by the changing nature of the American economy. Dispossessed people are great risk for the AIDS epidemic.
How are you going about researching this? Like you were saying earlier, funding is, I guess, preferred for more traditional types of research on AIDS and HIV. And to some people, it may sound like it might be difficult for them to make the connection between displacement and actually this disease that we hear so much about. And when we hear about it, we only hear about it in terms of sex. We only hear about it in terms of, you know, preventing it by having safer sex. How do you explain that, the connection, concretely for a person to understand? And then how do you go about researching something like that?
Well, the researching might be easier than the explaining.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the things that's happened in terms of research is people help me. But David has helped me. We've met together every month for 10 years now and talked about his story. We visited Elmwood. We visited with his neighbors and friends. We've looked at maps, studied the whole situation. So people in the neighborhoods have made sure that I had what I needed to study the story. Some foundations are interested in supporting this. So the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, the Open Society Institute have given me some funding. So I've been able to get some money. But I would say more important than the money is just the commitment of the neighborhood people everywhere. In Harlem, in the South Bronx, everywhere I go, neighborhood people want you to understand their stories. Now, the neighborhood people understand perfectly well what's going on. The issue is that just as the government doesn't want you to talk about land, the health department, which is part of the same government, doesn't want you to talk about these deeper issues that lead to disease. So it's not the people that don't understand. It's the government that doesn't want you to say it. So it's partly breaking through. How do you break the story out? And I'm grateful to be here today because I know WBAI Radio is one of the ways to break the story out.
And I kind of wanted to jump back a little, and I was just really curious to hear you talk a little bit more about some of the neighborhoods where people have been burnt out. And that seemed to be a nice example of what Saki was saying. How do you make this more concrete? That did seem to demonstrate a way in which the government could have helped a little bit more.
Well, quite the opposite. In neighborhoods that have been burned out, for example, the South Bronx and many neighborhoods in New York City, it was burned because of a city policy called planned shrinkage. They wanted to move people out of poor neighborhoods for a logic that I don't actually really understand, but that was their logic. And So they closed the firehouses and permitted the neighborhoods to burn. So the government was actually the person destroying, I mean, to the extent that the government is a person, the government was the entity destroying the neighborhoods. What happened, and the link between the spread of AIDS in the Bronx and the fires, is that the fires took out what was called the poverty spine of the Bronx. So it was an area with a lot of poor people and a lot of intravenous drug use. And they burned those neighborhoods down at a point when the AIDS epidemic had already arrived in New York City, but we didn't really know it yet.
Mm-hmm.
So some of those people were infected with AIDS. Again, this dispersion being spread all over. And to use the technical term, the people we talk about, endogamy and exogamy, meaning you share needles just with your little group. That's endogamy. Exogamy, you share needles with strangers. And if you've ever seen a shooting gallery in action, people were sharing needles with strangers. After the poverty spine is burned down, you get intravenous drug users dispersed all over the borough, sharing needles with strangers, and zip, you have a massive epidemic that takes out men, women, children for decades. But the government that burned the neighborhood down didn't exactly show up quickly to then save the neighborhood from the disease that had been created by the fires.
Right. And you're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. And we're being joined today by Dr. Mindy Full of Love. break, and we'll be back with a little bit more.
I've been working all my life, but ain't got nothing to show. I ain't telling you nothing you don't already know. I've been working all my life, but ain't got nothing to show. Like this world just don't want us to grow. I've been working all my life, but ain't got nothing to show. I ain't telling you.